Okay, Eric, we should close the door because we got the sound from the outside. So, welcome all to ICE. You were here last week? No, first time. Also not. Inspirational college events, and I thank Lauren Spilsinger for hosting it. Oh, next week you have to make arrangements. I won't be here next week.
Okay.
Nor the rest of the summer. So, all right. But next week there's a rally for against the deal with Iran. 5:30 to 7:30, so you may want to look into that also. All right, well, Lori Pirkei Avos, we read this week the second parak. So I want to do Mishnah Yud Aleph in the second parak. A very interesting Mishnah. Welcome.
Thank you.
Take the sitter. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Ayin Hara, V'yetzer Hara, V'sinas Habrios, Motzin HaSa'oda Min HaOlam. All right, meaning what? Rabbi Yeshua says, Ayin Hara, the evil eye, V'yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, V'sinas Habrios, hatred of other creatures, all these Motzin HaSa'oda Min HaOlam. They remove a person from this world. So let's take the end first, and then we'll work our way through the area. Yes?
Which one are we in again?
Beis Yud Aleph. Although the enumeration might be different in that. Let me see in the sitter where it would be. In the Art Scroll sitter. Oh, there's a Svart sitter. So that might be different also. But in any event, here it is Beis Tes Zion in the Sidur we have here, page 600. You see that?
Why does it change?
That's a good question. Obviously in the Siddur they broke it up into more Mishnayos than they had in the text than the Vilna Shas. The Vilna Shas compressed it. Even the Mishnayos though will have a different enumeration than it has in the Shas. But in the Shas they combined several into one, and here they just divided it. Better answer than that I don't have. But it's a general issue with Pirkei Avos especially. You find just it's numbered differently. Even Sidur will have it numbered differently. So here you have Tazayin, Rabbi Shomer. Perfect. Ayin hara, v'yetzah hara, v'sinas habrios, motzinas adam el olam. So the first question is, when we say it removes a person from this world, what world are we talking about? This world or the next world? We have a choice of two worlds. What would you think? All right, take the safe answer. Take the safe answer. Both. Both. So matzina sa'oda min ha'olam. So of course it's going to remove a person if these are sources of corruption in man. If they corrode our soul, then it's going to take us out of the next world. Because olam haba, a person standing in olam haba is dependent on our commitment to Torah mitzvos, chachmasar varov masav, our wisdom, and the way that wisdom impacts on our deeds. So obviously it's going to impair a person's standing, la'olam haba. But the simple pshat is, mo'tzin esod min ha'olam, it removes a person from this world. That is to say, it does not allow us to fully enjoy this world. These three maladies, these three imperfections, Ayin Hara, Yetzer Hara, Sinas Habrios, they deprive a person of the ability to enjoy this world. If we can't enjoy this world, then of course it's going to be a factor in our Avodas Hashem, in our understanding of Torah. It's going to corrupt us. But let's focus on that then. Olam Haba would seem to be obvious, but the loss of Olam Hazeh is not so obvious, especially since each of these comes about because a person is trying to seize more of Olam Haba. Can there be a situation, I'm sorry, Olam Hazeh, can there be a situation where a person tries to grab more of this world and winds up with less of this world? The answer is yes. And in fact, these are three phenomena that cause a person to lose this world, notwithstanding the person is trying to gain even more of this world. Let me share you just for classification purposes, very interesting approach of Rav Avinir in his commentary on Avos. So we really have two sets of mitzvos, right? Bein Adam la'makom, between man and God, and Bein Adam le'chaveiro, man and his fellow man. But there's a third classification as well, Bein Adam la'atzmo. So if you look at this area here, in fact, you have all three. Let's start from the end. What's in us abrios? That's a breach of the norms, Bein Adam l'chaveiro. It's a breach of the norms that are expected between man and his fellow man. Yetzer hara, the drive for instinctual gratification. So that really is an issue, Bein Adam l'atzmo, between man and himself. We have to control our appetites. Ayin hara is a violation of the norms that are expected between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So how is that? The question then becomes, what is Ayin Hara? What is the evil eye? Now, a few Mishnayos earlier, Rabbi Eliezer said that, asked, Tzu ur'u ezohi derech yishara shiyid bak baha adam, Rabbi Eliezer said, Ayin tova, and the converse, go and contemplate what is the way that a person should distance himself from. Rabbi Eliezer said, Ayin Ra'ah. What's the difference between Ayin Ra'ah and Ayin Hara? Alright? So Ayin Ra'ah is stinginess, miserliness. Ayin Hara is something else. Notice, Ayin Ra'ah is grammatically correct because Ayin is Lashon Nekeva. So he Ayin Ra'ah. It means his eye is a bad eye. It's a grudging eye. It looks at others grudgingly. Ayin Hara is different. The Rav said Ayin Hara means the eye of the evil. So we now have to understand what exactly is the evil that we're talking about. Here Rabbeinu Yonah says, Ayin Hara, the eye of the evil, perish. Mi she'eino samech b'chalko. A person who is not happy with his lot, the oyenes chavero he ashir mimenu masai ye eshar osher gadol kamohu. And he constantly eyes his friend. Oyen means to scrutinize, to look askance, to look with suspicion, with negativity at something that your friend has, your friend who's wealthier than you are, and you wonder, masai ye eshar osher gadol kamohu. When will I obtain the wealth that he has? V'hu gorei morala atzmo. It causes evil to him. Vila chaveiro. Cause evil to the friend as well. Kashamru chachmei ha'teva. Like the scholars, the scientists of nature say. Mikol asher lirehu avir olem min ha'machshava hu. V'sarefes advarim she'oyein ben b'ein av hara. Person who is envious of what someone else has, so he eyes the source of his envy. Someone else buys a new car, you can't afford it, you're envious of the car, you look at the car. Oyenes chavera, oyenes hadvarim be'enav hara. What does it mean? It means on an unconscious level, you look at the car and hope he crashes it or someone scratches it. He has a nicer house than you, so you hope that it burns down. God forbid, no one should be hurt. But you hope that he doesn't have the enjoyment of that object because you don't have it. By the way, what's worse in terms of Ayin Hara? That you don't have it or that he does have it? What's worse? What do you think?
Isn't it that he does have it?
Yes, but what if you had it? Would you be satisfied? There's no right answer. I think not. I think it's both, but I think also that it bothers you more that he has it than that you don't have it. The fact that you don't have it, there's a chisaron, that is also a source of frustration. But the fact that he has it bothers you more. Because that he has it is what's motivating this type of envy. He's not samech bechelko because someone else has something different. An interesting question. I once discussed this in shul a few years ago. It took a survey. You know, the society is very big today on income inequality, of course. It's a bogus issue, you know. and I'll give you a good raya why it is. Let's say, for example, A earns $25,000 a year, and B earns $50,000 a year. What's the gap between them? $25,000. So let's say A is envious of B. He's earning twice as much. But let's say the next year, A earns $50,000, and B earns $100,000. In other words, each of their income has doubled over the course of a year. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Sounds like a good thing, right? Wouldn't you want your salary to double from year to year? Not you, maybe you're a socialist, but capitalists like me, we want our income to double. But the gap between them has grown. The gap was $25,000, and now the gap was $50,000. Would you be happier or unhappier with that state of affairs if you were A? What do you say? Each person's salary doubled, but the inequality between them doubled as well. Are you happy with that or unhappy with that? Let's hear. Imagine you're taking a poll, because I'll give you the results of a poll in a moment. You're happy or unhappy with that?
I think you would be unhappier. You would
be unhappier?
Yeah.
Why?
Because fine that you, but like, oh, look at, like, he still has more.
Okay, what do you say?
I would say the same thing.
Same thing, all right.
Like, you're top, then.
Let's hear.
Right, I mean, idealistically, I'd be happy because it's more than last time, but I guess I probably would focus on, like, the difference of the
gap.
Yeah, the gap doubled.
So. Okay.
I don't know. I think I would be happier that it increased also. I mean, I think that I would only feel, like, the resent for the increasing doubled if it was something, I'll say, like, within my field or something like that. Meaning, if it was a little bit closer.
All right.
Home,
so now you're putting all sorts of qualifications on it.
No, I'm saying, like, otherwise, like, I would see it as very external. Like, oh, he got double also. Okay, good.
Okay, so here's the bottom line. I don't care. If I have more, what do I care what someone else says? Doesn't affect me. But they took such a survey in these United States of America. And it turns out most people felt like you did, that they were unhappier having earned more money because the neighbor also earned more money. All right? It seems strange if you think about it, but that's exactly what Ayin Hara is. Ayin Hara means you define yourself by what someone else has. And that's Motzi Nes Adam Min HaOlam. We're in a society where most people are unhappy. Why are they unhappy? Because they're defining themselves by what other people have and not by what they have. If you define yourself by what you have, then you can live quite well. But what happens is, the Ayin Hara creates someone else's lifestyle as the standard by which you're going to measure your own. Think about it. If you do that, then someone else's house, someone else's car, someone else's clothing, someone else's spouse becomes the definition or the measure of what you have. And that's an inherently frustrating situation. Why? Because there will always be someone with more. All right? We see this in Teaneck. There are people who have the normies have two-car garages, right? But the people with three-car garages. Someone has three, someone's going to want four. So if it bothers you that someone has three and you have two, it's going to bother the person with three if someone has four. But let's say I only have two cars. No matter, because the outside sees, I have four-car garage, I have five-car, etc. There's no limit. When you do that, then that really is a source of constant frustration. In the Me'orei Or, he quotes a Rabbeinu Yonah here, and he gives the whole list. This word that Rabbeinu Yonah used, Oyein es Chavero, is taken from the Navi Shmuel Aleph, Vahi Shaul Oyein es David. When Shaul HaMelech turned on David HaMelech, or David before he was king, turned on him, he began to look with suspicion, with envy, at everything David had. It was all based on jealousy. Now listen to this. If that's the barometer, Leos Kasha Be'enov, then Hatzlachaso, person's success, Kinyanov, his acquisitions, Banav, his sons, Benosav, his daughters, Kvodo, the honor that he gets, Malaso, the virtues that he's reached. L'chein timtso anoshim balei ayin hara shemazikin bo ki efe hamazik ba'abotas einov. A person who's living such a life, he's a bal ayin hara. He just looks, he is ensconced in evil, and everything he looks at, therefore, is evil. If the measure of your life is going to be what someone else has, then you're really going down a very treacherous path. All right, so I took out my notes from my Rebbe, Rabbi Chait, and wouldn't you know it, this year I heard in March of 1985, boy, he's not dating myself. I would imagine none of you were born then, correct?
No.
Yep. Well, you should know people learned Torah before you were born also, so that's good to know. Anyway, well, he mentions it as an aside, an interesting point, part of Ayin Hara, the desire for what others have. I was a small child, by the way, when I heard the shir. That's the point I'm trying to make. And a dissatisfaction with one's own. And he brings this interesting proof that we all know. Anyone here an interior decorator? No. All right. I'll use the feminine pronoun because, as far as I see, most interior decorators are women. But what's the job of an interior decorator? Basically to tell you what someone else has or what she likes, instead of what you like. So you're defining yourself and your tastes, your likes and dislikes, not by what appeals to you, but by Erev Tov, but by what appeals to someone else. You sure you're here for this and not the pottery class?
Okay.
So why do people do it? And again, I'm not against interior decoration, although I haven't ever used one myself, but why do people do that?
Of what everybody else
exactly. It's negative in the sense of it's hara, but nonetheless it comes out of a similar source. Imagine a person defining what he or she likes based on what others like. Alright, it's interior decorating, leave it to the side for a moment. The whole fashion world is based on that. And as a shop dresser myself, you know, it always amuses me, the world of fashion. I find it quite amusing. I read not long ago that men dress women basically for their amusement. That's the fashion industry. Tell them to wear this, you have to wear that. And it's constantly changing as well. And men's styles change also. Not that I'm affected by it, but you know, if you notice, I'll speak about my world for a second, ties change. Ties go from thin to a little wider to very wide to not as wide to thin. And it changes year after year. All right, I just wear the same ties, and I hope I'm in accord with these styles. But why does that happen? Granted, it's a business. You know, this tie, by the way, is at least 15 years old, and still as fresh as on the day I bought it. But why do people do that? They do it for money. It has to change. Styles have to change, or the industry would die. But it's also to create a sense of envy, that if you don't have what's the latest, somehow you're not hip, you're not cool, you're not up to date, you're not conforming to someone else's vision of what you're supposed to wear. And that becomes problematic. That actually feeds the Ayin Hara. Why is it Motzi Yasodim and Olam? Because it's a source of unending frustration. Imagine buying something new and then realizing a month after you bought it, oh, the style's just changed. The word came out of Paris. Everything is different this year. And that's what happens. I remember, you'll remember it also, it was a couple of years ago where the Parisian styles were long skirts. Remember that? And I remember a lot of firm women said, oh, it's wonderful, finally. The styles are in accord with what we're supposed to wear. But then the next year it changed and they're left looking obsolete, old-fashioned. But nonetheless, it was a good ride while it was in existence. But how then does a person let others decide what he or she should wear, what type of car he or she should drive, what type of house, what type of furniture, what type of art, etc.? That leads to great frustration. And that's Motzi Yasodam Min Ha'olam. At the end of the day, what Rabbeinu Yonah is talking about here, Ayin Hara, Misha Eino Somech Bechalko. a person who's not content with his lot, and that doesn't mean a person is not ambitious. It means that a person derives no satisfaction from what he or she has. Rather, the satisfaction can only be obtained if someone else, if you obtain what someone else whom you admire has. And if that becomes the criterion, then there's no end. And therefore, that becomes a lack of simcha b'chelko. That's psychologically very debilitating, and therefore, a person is going to lose whatever pursuit of perfection that, for which he or she is striving. Note the strong words here: gam bekirbo yisraf, achash misavel dvorim. What happens is his insides start to burn with yearning, with jealousy, because it doesn't have the capacity to obtain what he has. So it harms a person physically. Why physically? Have you heard the expression burn with envy? I didn't just make it up. Yeah, it's an expression. You burn with that. Literally, it bothers you inside to see someone has something that you want but you can't have. And it's iskatze rucho as well. Ruach is always an expression of one's psyche. It's psychologically debilitating to want something and not be able to have it. In the simplest sense, just to judge what you want by what someone else has. It's a very unhealthy psychological state. Motzi min olam, in that you can't enjoy this world. If the measure of what your happiness in this world is what someone else is going to have or has, then your goose is cooked. I hope I don't offend the vegetarians here with that expression. Your goose is cooked because you'll never find happiness. Happiness, by the way, is an internal state. It's not an external state, and it cannot be afforded by externals. It can only be afforded by an internal realization that a person is content with what he or she has. That's the first one. Rabbi Yeshua had a second one as well, and that's Yetzer Hara. What's Yetzer Hara? So here, Rabbeinu Yonah says, Yetzer Hara is what we know. It's the drive for instinctual gratification, for satisfaction. That's the second. He doesn't mention it's kimashmon, but the Rambam defines it here. Rov hatava is an abundance of physical pleasure. What's wrong with physical pleasure? I mean, the fact is, we're human beings. We're allowed to pursue physical pleasure. Rov, that's not tava. Rov hatava means there's a certain state where quantitatively a person's pursuit of pleasure is going to be frustrating. Is going to be overwhelming. It changes the quality of life. There's a certain type of gratification of physical pleasure that actually brings a person joy. All right, you're hungry. There's a tasty food. You consume that food. Your hunger is sated, and now you move on. But we know what's true of food is true of money is true of any physical desire that a person has. If a person thinks that more of something is going to necessarily bring a better state, then that is not true. That's Yetzer Hara. Yetzer Hara means the drive for instinctual gratification, rov hataiva. You reach a stage whereby, Rabbi Chait said, it's not the physical act that you are looking to for gratification, but rather it's the fantasy that's associated with a physical act. It's the desire. Where the pursuit is the fantasy, then that becomes problematic, because that will never be achieved. It will always bring a person a greater thirst and a greater sense of dissatisfaction. In fact, that's how Koheles begins. Havel havelim amar Koheles, havel havelim akol havel. What's the hevel? The hevel is not... Right, on some level, havel havelim, one hevel is the physical act also. You desire it, you satisfy it, and then you think that thirst is slaked. What's the double hevel? The double hevel is the fantasy that's attached to it. Meaning that when you desire something, it's not just the physical action that you are seeking to fulfill, but rather it's something in addition to that. The fantasy is in addition. If I mention any particular desire, if I mention a piece of cake, there's no doubt you, like me, have a certain image in mind. For me, it's chocolate cake. I just say cake, and all of you will be thinking of something. Sounds good, huh? It sounds something particular. But that cake is a fantasy, all right? The cake that I eat is never as good as the image of the cake that I had in my mind. And that's true of every particular desire that a person has. Look, that was the chait of Adam HaRishon as well. What does the Torah say? He saw the eitz, v'chisa'avahu le'enayim. Savul Einai means the desire that he had, the appeal of the fruit on the tree to Adam exceeded its physical dimensions, its ability to provide him with gratification, with satiation. That is the instrument of the Yetzer Hara. Of course, that's that story at the beginning of Bereishis, where Adam was left susceptible to temptation because it wasn't the fruit, the physical fruit. There are many other fruit he could have eaten, both in the gan, from other trees. It was the taiva of the fruit in that particular tree, especially its forbidden quality, but that's almost a side point. The fruit itself, Rama says, was no different than any other fruit. It looked the same as it was just the tree was the substance of Isser. It was a cheftah shel Isser for him, so it made it more appealing. But note, it wasn't just that he wanted to eat it. It was tavahu le'enayim. There's something he saw in that fruit that created an excess of desire. And it's an excess of desire, that fantasy, that actually destroyed him. If a person, look, we're all motivated by the Yetzara. You know, Chazal say, if we didn't have the Yetzara, we wouldn't build a house, wouldn't have children, wouldn't get married, wouldn't go to work, we wouldn't do anything. We wouldn't partake of the physical world at all, except in terms of our basic needs, but we wouldn't have any sense of satisfaction. The fact is, we're allowed to have a sense of satisfaction. It's when it exceeds a certain level, then the problems arise, and that drives a person into a state of constant dissatisfaction, a constant look elsewhere, and that's where I see people get into problems, you know, in the male world with women, generally with theft and all sorts of things, because the gratifications become too staid, too unfulfilling psychologically, and therefore a person seeks too much, and that's motzi and esa adam min ha'olam. And now we come to the third one with his sinas habrios. What's in us, Abrios? So the Rambam says, interestingly, Roa ha-nefesh, it becomes an embitterment of the soul. V'hu choli ha-mora ha-shchora. Mora shchora means depression, despondency, an illness. She-yovi ha-odom lim-os ra-os e-nov v'yisna-ehu. A person, it brings a person to reject, to scorn anything that his eyes see. The snow, he hates it, meaning he hates people. The misogynist, he hates people. The yative low, I'm sorry, misogynist, someone who hates women. I meant the misanthrope. A misanthrope is a person who hates mankind. What does he do like? The yative low chevras achayos, the hasbodados bimidbaros uviyaros. So the person who hates mankind has two options. One, he could seek the company of animals. All right. Are there people like that? Yes. There are people who surround themselves with animals because they can't stand human beings. That's one option. And the second is hisbodus bimidbaros uviyaros. He becomes a hermit. And he lives in the wilderness and in the forests. V'yivchar lo mokom she'ena miyushov. This is the Rambam. He chooses to live in a place that's not settled, not civilized. There are no other people around. Vize etzlam lomitzad precious raklu roa ta'ava sam vikinasam bizulasam. Why do they do this? Not because they want to be parshim, prushim, not because they want to be, they want to abstain from various pleasures. Rather, luroa ta'ava sam vikinasam bizulasam. because of the excess of desire and envy that they have in the other. In other words, the Rambam says, he sees this as she's building. Rabbi Shira said three things, Ayin Hara Yetzara and Sinas Abrios. A person who's overcome with an Ayin Hara, meaning a discontent with what he has, because he always defines himself by what someone else has, jealousy, or Yetzara, he's just in pursuit of constant pleasure and finds it ultimately ungratifying, that person eventually will wind up being a Sone Abrios. He'll hate other people, because it's other people who are the sources of his discontent with life, of his dissatisfaction, his displeasure. All these things, the Rambam concludes, Elu yamisu ha'odam belo safek, ki yechele gufo, v'yoros terem ito. Notice the Rambam says, yes, Motzinas Adam and Ola means in this world, not the next world. They'll shorten a person's life because this type of unhappiness is going to, without a doubt, make him sick and therefore diminish his lifespan. Well, why does a person hate other people and prefer solitude to the company of others? Well, you see from the Rambam that a hermit cannot identify with other people. Normally human beings have some identification. We see others, you know, we see people there. We try to find similarities, what differences that are, you know, interesting. The hermit can't do that because the hermit, note the Rambam's language, L'roa ta'avasam v'kinasam bezulasam. The hermit looks at other people and all he sees are objects of envy, sources of jealousy, of competition, and of frustration. So therefore, he says, better I should just leave this entire competitive environment and go live in the wilderness. Are there people like that? Yes, we call them nuts. But those are the ones in the wilderness. There's a more common person who does not live in the wilderness, who lives amongst others, but he keeps distant. He keeps apart. He's unsociable. He is, in the word the Rambam uses here, Yetiv lo chevra sachayas, seeks the company of dogs, of cats, of birds, surrounds himself with people who can't talk back to him, who can't engage with him, or I think it's not uncommon. Look, I'm sure there are animal lovers here amongst this august group, but what this type of person tends to do is humanize the animals around him, make them into humans. I guess on some level, animals have emotions as well, but look, a dog is very loyal. A dog can be more loyal to an owner than a friend is to another friend. And a dog will rarely be disappointing to a person. You know, I say the politicians say if you want a friend in Washington, get a dog. That's a very famous aphorism. Dogs can be loyal, but the tendency to personify them, to humanize them, is troubling. Ever see people put sweaters on dogs? Why? Dogs are not cold. They don't react to cold like human beings do. Why do they do that? Because they're humanizing them. They're seeing them as little people who perform for them, who amuse them, who play with them, who listen to them without talking back, who never criticize them for any of their failings. That's Yetiv lo chevra sachayos. The person who enjoys the company of animals over the company of people has really destroyed himself because he's not partaking of a society. He really can't live without the society, but he can't live within the society either. He can't tolerate the comparison that exists with other people. By the way, Rashi says here, very simply, and I guess apropos of the season that we're passing through now, Rashi says, what's sinas abrios? Sinas chinam. All right? Baseless hatred. What's baseless hatred? You know, the truth is that we bandy about that term recklessly because for the most part, if someone hates someone or something, there's a reason for it. Anything you hate? Yes. Any reason for it? I'm sure there's a reason for it. Any person you hate? You have a person that you hate? Come on, tell the truth. Well, some we don't like. Is there a reason why we don't like them? Yeah, there's always a reason. Sometimes that reason is even justified. In which case, what's in Aschina? How could you have a hatred that's not based on anything? That doesn't seem very very rational. So Rashi means there's no external reason. It could be a contrived or concocted reason for hatred. I always explain Sinas Chinam in the context of the Churban as a self-destructive hatred. That does exist also. Meaning a hatred that, like the story of Kamsa for Kamsa, that he didn't mind destroying himself as long as he got to destroy others as well. A tamus nafshi im plishtim mentality. I don't mind dying as long as I bring someone else down. By the way, that goes back to the first point I made, the envy over income inequality. If you earn double, and your friend earns double as well, and you are resentful of the fact that the gap has grown, that in fact is a type of sinas chinam as well, because what you're saying is, I don't mind earning 25 again as long as he earns 25 also. Okay? That is actually irrational from an economist standpoint, but I guess I'm proven wrong. It's rational from a psychologist standpoint or philosopher standpoint based on the notion of ayin hara. But if you think about it, that really is sinas chinam. I don't mind what he has. What bothers me is what he has. And that becomes more troubling. That really is not rational. That's sinas abrios that we're talking about here. There are good reasons to hate people or to dislike people. Always good reasons for that, but that's not what we're talking about. Sinas chinam really is there's no good reason. There's no external reason. There's no justification, reality for that type of hatred. But nonetheless, it exists. It exists not because of what the other did. It exists because of a flaw that I have. And that becomes, of course, the critical point here. All these three mentioned by Rabbi Yeshua are three different types of frustrations. Three different areas of frustration. If someone has more, then there's a resentment because we think that God favors him more. That was the Ben Adam Lamakom that I mentioned. Or there's frustration because of an inability to fulfill one's desires. Or there's a frustration because of repressed hatred against another. That's the sinas abrios that exists as well. So everyone has it to some degree, but usually we're able to control it. If we control it, it actually enriches our lives because it can be a catalyst for the pursuit of the good in our own lives. Right? Ayin hara doesn't have to be discontent because someone else has it. It could lead me to be more ambitious, to work harder, to try to achieve something that if I think I need it, that'll make me a better person. Yetzara could teach me to pursue desire in moderation. So it's most fulfilling. Even sinas abrios can remind me that there's something off if I hate someone so much without a real valid reason. You know, a lot of times feuds within families or between families reach that stage where a generation or two generations on, they don't even remember anymore what they were fighting about. Was that the story in Romeo and Juliet? They forgot why the families hated each other? I don't remember. You would know the classics better than I would. But yeah, the Capulets, the Montagues, whoever they were, you reach a certain stage, you know, why did we dislike each other? You know, I've met families like that, that their feuds go on for generations, but they no longer remember what exactly it was that started the feud. In any event, that's also part of defining oneself by another, by what someone else did or what someone else has. And when that happens, the frustrations grow to a level where it's motzinas adam min ha'olam. So you have these three types of dissatisfactions, these three types of frustrations, and the truth is these are three emotions that control the world, control the way we relate to the world through the world of the material, through the world of the interpersonal, and the world of the personal as well. each of them, taken of themselves, enrich our lives. But when the proportion exceeds the boundaries of what is normal, then it becomes destructive. The Gra says here that the proof case for all of these is Bilam, Bilam HaRasha. The truth is, you go through Tanakh and find representations of all of them in different people, but Bilam was like that. Bilam had the Ayin Hara, right? Desire for money, the Taiva, Yitenli Kol Baiso Kesev Izahav, meaning he had a desire for that, and Sinas Habrios. All he wanted to do was destroy others, to bring others down. Well, how do we avoid then falling prey to this? How do we avoid that? Any good ideas? Because these things are actually quite prevalent. One, or all three, at least in part, they're very prevalent. So how do we avoid that? Well, we avoid that by two ways. One is a constant review, a reflection on our motivations, on our desires, on the way we interact. You know, sometimes we'll meet someone and we'll be bothered by them. And we can't completely articulate what it is about the person that ticks us off, that sets us off. Sometimes it's a stranger, sometimes it's a friend that whose friendship begins to wear thin on us. Why that takes place, I think most people, if they just sat back, took a deep breath and thought a little, contemplated, and looked inwardly rather than outwardly, they'd be able to deduce exactly what bothers them about that person. And most of the time, it's not going to be something about that person. It's going to be something within themselves that they just can't handle. Some weakness, some flaw, some imperfection, some unrequited desire that leaves them in a state of unhappiness that they're just projecting onto other people. And isn't that really sinus abrios, ultimately? People who have a dislike for other human beings, it's not really, I think Rabbi Chait said this, it's not really the other human beings that are bothering them. It's rather something within them that they hate. And they just see it in others, and so it's in the other people that it just makes it easier for them to deal with superficially. But if they want to overcome that, and we all do, so as not to have to forfeit this world as well, then a good talking to by oneself, without verbalization, is going to help us. Let me just... Any questions?
Hi.
Yes?
Could you elaborate like what the Ayin Hara would look like in other forms that aren't monetary related? Like, meaning, just because, like something that wouldn't be like, oh, she has a bigger house than I do, meaning something that like seems a little bit less petty. Like,
right.
I'm sure it manifests in something a little bit more, like, emasculating.
It happens in the dating world also. You know, I'm a little past that myself, but, you know, on some level, there are people there. Yeah, let's say a roommate, right? Your roommate goes out with someone, and you say, oh, I wish I was going out with that person. Are there cases where the roommate sabotages the date? I've read about it. I'm not saying you, but I read about it. It does happen. That's an example. The Rambam says, charitzus lamamon. It's like a passion for money, the Ayin Hara, because it most expresses itself in the material, but it can express itself in the personal as well. Any area of life where a person is or is not samech b'chelko, you're going to find it. Most of the time it's the material, but it can be personal as well. Here, take a case of of grades or degree or profession, etc. That's also possible. People yearn for something, but they can't achieve it because of limitations, whether limitations are financial or intellectual, that someone else has something they want. It could drive a person crazy if they don't have it, if they're not content with what they do have. And that's where you come to the situation of judging oneself by what someone else has. That is a treacherous and most unhappy proposition. And you'd be surprised how common that is in the world. Look, the fact is, all of advertising is based on that. I mentioned fashion and interior decorating before, but the whole advertising industry is based on that, all right? The whole industry. you know, and it depends, divided between advertising that appeals to men and advertising that appeals to women, all right? What's the advertising that appeals to men? All right, so the sports shows, whether it's the beer commercial, the car commercials, or the truck commercials, somehow there are all these women out there, beautiful women, drinking beer, driving trucks. I've never actually seen that myself in real life, but nonetheless, it plants the thought in the man, if I drink this beer or drive that car, I'll get the woman attached to it. I bought a few cars in my life. There's never been a woman attached to it. But nonetheless, it's used to sell because it's the fantasy that they're selling, especially since if a person is not otherwise motivated, you know, very rarely will they try to sell a car because of the nature of the engine or the durability of the car. It's just not as appealing. I mean, they used to, I don't think they do this anymore, but they used to advertise certain cars for the speed that it reached, like 110, 150. No one drives that fast. Or there was a car, I don't remember what it was, they would advertise, you go 0 to 60 in 4 seconds. Which I guess is neat if you could do that, but just on what road are you going to do that, right? What highway? What red light are you going to stop at that you then want to get to 60 miles per hour in 4 seconds? But it's the illusion of control, that I can have control of a certain territory by mastering it at a very high rate of speed, even though the image that's projected is a completely unrealistic one. But it's just designed to plant in the person envy. There's a time they also advertise the horsepower of cars. Why cars need horsepower is a different question, but, you know, however they measured it, they stopped doing it because I guess people like me lost interest in it. But it meant the car was a very powerful car. I mean, I always look at the car as a vehicle that gets me from point A to point B without breaking down. That's the idea of a car. But the car selling a fantasy as well. I once mentioned in shul, I don't understand, I said this, I didn't understand the whole phenomenon of buying expensive cars. Like a Lexus, and Infiniti, it was a Cadillac in a certain time. Like, why spend $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 on a car when you can spend $15,000? All right, the pleasures are different, the comforts are different. But at the end of the day, no one goes into a car to spend time there. You go into a car to get from one place to another. So I guess you could have a slightly better experience while getting from one place to another, but it's not the essence. So why spend more money? So someone said to me afterwards, it's not true. This person deals with banks on a regular basis, and if he shows up to a meeting driving a fancy car, he gets more attention and more respect. And if he drives up in a Chevy, they just look at the person differently. They say, you know what? You're right. There's a certain reality to it. But it's exaggerated as well. Most people do it for image. They should feel better about themselves, or as we're seeing from the Mishnah, so others should look at them a certain way and be objects of envy. And a person wants to be, an imperfect person wants to be the object of envy. And then that sets this whole spiral into motion and just leads to a competition which is just endlessly frustrating. The bottom line is, whoever is the wealthiest person in the world, there's a limit to how much you could spend on your pleasures, even a limit to how much you can spend in order to achieve honor or glory or respect from others. But there's always going to be someone who has more money than you, all right? Even the wealthiest person in the community, whoever it might be, that person will be surpassed by someone else. And when you are on that very frustrating treadmill of competing with others in areas that are completely meaningless and don't reflect on a person's essence, then that gives rise to this notion of otsa min olam. And you do see people from time to time who are just embittered by life, because they don't have what they want, even though they have everything that they need. And they're blessed, really blessed, with things that in the real world in real life are designed to bring them every possible type of satisfaction and to make them grateful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what's been given to them. But that's in the real world. We're living in the fantasy world. In the world that Rabbi Yeshua posits, then it's completely different. The tzaddik is the one who lives in the real world. The tzaddik is the person who's grounded in reality, who's not defined by others, who's not beset by the ayin hara, but really the ein hatov. What's the ein hatov? Ein hatov is the ability to look at another person and be happy for them. All right? Is that common? I like to think it's common. I'm not in a world of pessimists tonight, am I? I like to think it's common. You look at someone else and you're generally happy for them. Some good befalls them and you're happy for them. By nature, you know, I'm not a jealous person. It just I have other bad traits that I try to cultivate. But that's not one of them. I've just never been a jealous. It never mattered to me. If someone had more or less, I didn't gloat over those who had less or envy those who have more. It just doesn't affect me at all. I'm told it's not normal that most people are, but just it never bothered me. I just thought that ingredient is missing in my personality. Others are as well, by the way. That's a different issue. But that I never had. Other things I did, but I never understood it, but it is prevalent. And you see it in people, and you see how debilitating it is. And I've spoken to this about people, both in public and in private. Like, why does it bother you if someone else is successful? Why does it bother someone else won the ladder, someone else did this, has that? It doesn't affect you one way or the other. In reality, so you have to get over it. That's the Ein HaTov. Ein HaTov is the ability to nurture a view of others that is generous, that is positive, that is sincere in wishing them only good in life. What's the opposite of the Yetzirah Hara, the drive for the instinctual? That's the Yetzirah HaTov. That's the drive for the spiritual, the drive for the intellectual that every person has. We have to break through in order to access it. It's not natural. The drive for the instinctual has a head start, but nonetheless, that's what gives the person the most satisfaction in life. And it happens to be true. The pleasures of the Yetzirah Tov, right, whether it's in terms of Talmud Torah, or doing mitzvos, or certainly doing acts of chesed, the feeling that a person gets, the good feeling, surpasses anything that exists in the world of the physical. Even the good feelings in the world of the physical, the pleasures, are short-lived, right? Even that cake that I'm thinking about now, oh, if only I had a cake like that at home now, I'd go home and eat it, but I digress. Even that cake, the pleasure exists for a minute, 2 minutes. But the pleasure of doing a chesed for someone, the good feeling that a person has, even you go to a shiur, a good shiur, not this one, but a good shiur, where the mind is engaged and opened, and you feel a sense of enlightenment that you savor for a much longer period of time. And of course, tefillah, well recited, a mitzvah performed in its optimum fashion, those are different types of pleasures. You know, people... there's sometimes a sense of frustration with mitzvos because they're not providing the pleasures of the Yetzirah. It's not the physical gratification we're getting out of it. Which is true, that's not the intent. But nonetheless, the pleasures are much more long-lasting. That sense of koras ruach, of satisfaction, that a person has indulged the essence of the human being, the soul, and not something else. And of course, the opposite of sinas habrios is avas habrios. How do we cultivate avas habrios? Which is also a very healthy trait to have. All right, there's a mitzvah, v'hafer chakamocha, we understand the mitzvah. Great. Even the mitzvah is a difficult mitzvah, and as you well know, Hillel phrased it in the negative, which is maybe more realistic for people. If you can't love someone else as you love yourself, at least don't do things that you despise to them. Fine. But you can reach a level of avas habrios. And how do you do that? So Chazal tell us, by seeing other people as fellow creatures of God. Ata birya v'hu birya, Gemara says in Brachos. He's a creature, you're a creature. Hu malachtecha b'yir, yu malachtecha b'sada. He works in the city, he has an office job, and I work in the field, I'm a farmer. What's the difference, really? It makes no difference. We each do our own thing, with different personalities, but he has rights and claims and privileges, like I have rights and claims and privileges. That's how the Gemara ends. One does more, one does less. As long as the intentions of the heart are pure and directed to God, that's the essence. To cultivate avas abrios, so that's a trait that should be worked on. Is it natural to people, avas abrios? I don't know, maybe it's not. It probably is not. It has to be worked on. Because we're born with what exactly Rabbi Yoshua highlights here. Ayin hara, yetzer hara, sinas habrios. We're born competitive. We're born with a certain sense of animosity, with appetitive drives, with instinctual drives. We're born even to try to conquer, to dominate, to rule. Yeah, all those expressions of man's animalistic side. We don't have to act on that. And certainly we're able, we're given the gifts, the tools, to cultivate the exact opposite. So rather than be motzi min ha'olam, in fact we become grounded in this world. What's the opposite to be removed from this world? I don't say immersed in this world. I would say to enjoy this world. And we're given the tools to enjoy life. If only we knew and recognize that the real enjoyments of life are very accessible to us and very easy to achieve as long as they're not commingled with excessive fantasies, rove taiva, an abundance of desire, and worse, the ayin hara, the eye of the evil, a grudging eye, a dissatisfaction, a judgment of one's own good in life based on what someone else has. I always say, and I'll close with this, that we say about Yosef, Yosef HaTzadik said of himself, Ben Parat Yosef, Ben Parat Ale Oyin. All right? So Chazal say that Yosef, the Zara of the Yosef, are not subjected to the Ayin Hara. All right? Why not? Why not? In fact, that's the bracha that Yaakov gave. You look at Parshas Vayechi, V'yidgu l'arov bekerav ha'aretz. A famous pshat of Soloveitchik said, V'yidgu l'arov bekerav ha'aretz. You should multiply like fish in the midst of the earth. What's the problem with the pasuk? Fish not the earth, fish in the water. V'yidgu l'arov bekerav ha'aretz. So what's the pshat? The pshat is that fish are not envious of human beings because they live in their own environment. They live in the water. We can't live in the water. They do. So they have no envy of anyone outside their framework. That's the bracha. Be like a fish, but be like a fish on earth. Yosef did not define himself. At one time he did, that was his flaw. But towards the end of his life, he no longer defined himself by what his brothers thought of him, what Potiphar, his wife, thought of him, by what the Paro thought of him. He didn't define himself like that. He defined himself one way. As a Yitzir Kapov Shal Kadosh Baruch Hu, as an Eved Hashem, that's how he saw himself. And that was the happiest state to be in. That's when Yosef was able to say to his brothers that you thought to do me evil, Elokim Chashev L'Tova. As a human being, it no longer affects me, because I'm living on a different plane of existence. The one who is not subject to the Ayin Hara, or the Yetzer Hara in its abundance, or Sinas Abrios, that person lives a different plane of existence, and that person, of that person, we say, Ashrecha v'tov loch, Ashrecha b'olam hazeh, v'tov loch l'olam haba. You're fortunate in this world, and it's good for you in the next world as well, because in fact you have both. Okay. Any questions? No questions. All right, so next week we'll try to arrange for someone else to come.
Okay.
All right?
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.